Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Brown takes the knee. 30 seconds to go. That's going to do it. The Texans beat Miami. They clinch a winning season, and they can clinch the division if the Colts lose to Denver later. What a day for the Houston defense. Derek Stingley Jr., two picks, including the one that ended the Dolphins' final threat. The Chiefs are next. Wow.
AFC South champions 2 years in a row, Brian.
Yeah, but you guys are back in the...
Doesn't matter what it looked like. Back in the playoffs. Looking forward to the playoffs.
Exactly.
Go ahead. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Have you heard the good news? I know it's usually reserved for the Astros, but when you clinch a second straight AFC South championship, and this time we didn't have to wait till the day after the Texans played their final game of the season to clinch it. December 15th, division clinched. Texans are in the postseason, which starts literally like 4 weeks from today. So we've got... It's an interesting
patch.
That
seems like a long time away.
Interesting patch of regular season coming up here because, boy, there's some marquee games. And yet the Texans have, the worst case is they're the four seed in this thing. A lot of things fell their way yesterday, though. You know, Steelers losing, Mahomes getting hurt in his game, spraining an
supposedly.
Ankle.
Supposedly. Any Bills fan will tell you, like, oh, this is his annual, I've got a sprained ankle, but I'm a warrior.
It looked pretty
I'm
bad.
I'm going to fight through it.
It looked pretty bad. But
lots of things look bad, Sean.
Yeah. Not the Texans.
You see my face? I've done all right.
Not the Texans. Yeah, you've hung in there good.
Yeah.
Texans win yesterday. Colts lose yesterday. AFC South champs, Brian.
Yeah.
As a once average coach stated following a Brock Osweiler-led Texans team clinching a division. AFC South champs, second year in a row, Brian.
It was, a lot of Texans victories this year have been a little bit unsatisfying. You just afterwards, it's hard not to think about this or that. Yeah. Yesterday, I could make a book case for yesterday's win being unsatisfying because the offense actually didn't do much at all.
Right.
And yet, I think, and I'm trying to check the vibes of the fan base and whatnot, and I don't know about how you feel about it from the post-game show where you get a lot of calls. I think for me, and maybe other people feel this way, I watched yesterday's performance and I thought, you know what? All right, the offense is what it is. But if maybe this can be one of those teams like the Lovie Smith Bears where you ride an opportunistic defense that forces turnovers and just is a different type of football team, but every now and then it works in the playoffs.
That's going to have to be what it
is. Yeah, right.
There's no choice. That's if you choose to be optimistic, that's the only route you can take right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, optimistic as far as how far can they go in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think that defense, look, man, Derek Stingley, awesome. Good job. The defensive player of the week to you. Yesterday for me, as we talked about all week, one of the big tests was going to be, okay, Kalen Bullock has been awesome for a rookie. He's really got to start playing like a veteran safety. And man, that's exactly what he did yesterday. Aside from the PBU that could have been a pick, and then on the next series, kind of duping Tua with a similar look defensively, he's able to pounce on that and get a near pick six. Man, A-chan is fast. A-chan. But then in the second half, the Texans were playing single high the whole time. And like with your rookie safety back there. And they did a great job. They limited the explosive plays. The longest play for the Dolphins yesterday was 21 yards. So for me, okay, you're still down Azeez Alshire, but you've also got Kalen Bullock at safety that's playing more like a veteran safety.
Yeah, and you got Christian Harris back yesterday, and Christian Harris played, I think, I haven't seen the snap counts yet. It felt it felt like he was out there a lot because he was around the ball quite
a bit. He was around the ball a lot, and he took out one of the sideline crew at one point with such speed that I thought for sure that guy was goner. But kudos to him, whoever you are.
Hey,
he
man,
popped right up and got back in the
he's
game.
He's got to shake off the rust somehow if you lose a random sideline guy in the process.
Those are
so
the two things yesterday where it just caught my eye and it took my attention away from the action was, one, Achan. Like a fighter jet coming in out of nowhere.
To tackle Bullock.
I saw as Bullock, maybe, I don't know how it looked on TV, but from above, you could see how fast Achan was moving.
That
it was crazy. That was fast. And then Christian Harris on that play where he was flying to the sideline. He was moving so fast to the sideline that I ignored the action on the field and I saw him take out that sideline crew guy.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
He looked good. He looked good yesterday. That was a microcosm of what the Texan season has been. You're absolutely right, Seth. They're going to go as far as the defense and the special teams. Special teams were excellent yesterday.
Right.
I'm not just talking about the fake punt. Like, coverage teams, Kaimi Fairbairn, Tommy Townsend, like, top-to-bottom special teams were excellent yesterday, too.
The one little asterisk I'll put on there is, if you could just stay on sides on that field goal attempt.
Oh, MJ Stewart, and he's done. MJ Stewart's got more penalties on special teams this year.
Yeah, he had the false start on the fake punt a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, when they were kind of lining up to.
Yeah. So, but other than that, and MJ Stewart had that illegal blocking, defensive blocking. Where was that?
Yesterday?
That was Eric Murray.
That was
right,
Murray.
Right.
Yeah.
Excuse me, MJ Stewart. I apologize.
we're not going to give you all the penalties.
And then I heard that MJ Stewart was responsible for all kinds of.
There's a lot of storylines with this. Obviously, the biggest one is that the Texans are AFC South champs. They will be going to the postseason again. At worst case, they're the 4 seed. They picked up a game on the Steelers yesterday, who are the 3 seed right now. And as you've pointed out, Seth, the Steelers play a hellacious schedule down the stretch. Well, I say they play a hellacious schedule. They play the same teams the Texans do, practically. They play the Chiefs and the Ravens also in that little round robin that we've got coming up over the next few days. So division champs, let's give the obviously not just the defense kudos, but D'Amico Ryan's. Man, two division championships in his first 2 years. This has been a harder year, I think, probably, maybe in press conferences and things like that, because the offense has been so underwhelming. They're doing this kind of the flip of what everybody thought it was going to be at a 30,000-foot level before the season. When they traded for Diggs and brought in Joe Mixon, the thought was, man, this is going to be an incredible offensive fireworks display, and whatever happens with the defense happens with the defense. It's been the opposite of that. If it's possible to have fireworks on defense, they've had fireworks on defense this year, including yesterday. They had 3 sacks. They came at one of them was just a shove out of bounds of Tua, but the other 2 sacks were massive in this game. The Will Anderson strip sack fumble and then the Danielle Hunter sack on the second to last drive that made it 2nd and 25 and squelched that drive.
Yeah.
The Dolphins got one more bite at the apple, but Derek Stingley extinguished that on the very first play, and that's the other big story, man. Stingley, he's not on any of those charts for Defensive Player of the Year right now, any of the odds boards, but you'd have a hard time finding a cornerback who's playing better football, I would imagine.
No,
right now.
When you look at the stats of how many times he was targeted, how many yards he allowed, it was like one of the better performances this season by any defensive
back. Yeah, I love that all 3 interceptions yesterday, they were targeting Tyreek Hill.
And Tyreek Hill, definitely on the second one, Tyreek Hill might be wondering to himself, maybe I was wrong about Pat Mahomes not having as good ball placement as Tua Tagovailoa.
There's that.
Well, no, the second one, I would say the first one, because the second one, he had the ball in his hands.
He had the ball. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. The second one, I think Tyreek Hill thought he was catching that
good
ball.
Good call, yeah. He had it. Stingley's so, he's strong. Yeah, he's not a big dude.
No,
but he's strong,
hands.
Man. He's just got such he tracks the ball so well.
Yeah,
he should be every fan's dream, because the thing that drives fans the craziest is when a defensive back doesn't turn and look for the ball.
Yeah,
and the simple answer for why defensive backs don't do that more easily is because it's really, really hard.
Yes,
Stingley makes it look like he's the intended receiver.
It's incredible.
It's really, like, he knows exactly where it's coming down, and a lot of times he just has a better feel for it than the receiver himself.
We had him on the post-game show yesterday, and he's not always the most talkative guy. He was as talkative yesterday afternoon in the post-game show as I've ever heard him.
Yeah. Little Chatty Cathy, take that championship belt, you Chatty Cathy.
Yeah, here's some other antiquated references for you, Derek Stingley. this is what jumped out at me. Maybe we'll get this audio for later in the show. I asked him to take us through each of the interceptions. I don't know if you had a chance to hear it or not, Seth. I asked him to take us through each of the interceptions, and the level, the degree of detail to which he went in reading how Tyreek Hill was lined up, what he was expecting in that particular situation, the leverage. Like, he's describing it, and I was like, man, this dude is a... He is an intellectual cornerback.
Oh, yeah. He's really...
He's super smart.
There's one thing about Stingley, because he's quiet and he's not going to, you know, throw up a bunch of Instagrams showing how hard he's working and everything. You know, you and I know from being out of practice every morning, he's out there beforehand, and then he's out there, whether if it's 103 degrees, and he's out there with a receiver or two every single day working on stuff at the end of practice.
Yeah. Yep. He was very impressive with us in the post game, and then he was touting Kalen Bullock for Pro Bowls and Rookie of the Year. And I'm like, well, what about you, man? You're having a good year. He's like, oh, my footwork and this and that. And I'm like, oh, now I know why they love you so much over there.
Yeah, and Kalen Bullock, honestly, he's been a revelation. I forget a lot of times that Kamari Lassiter and Kalen Bullock are rookies. Even as I'm, Kamari Lassiter less so, but Kalen Bullock, all those things where for a safety, you can play really, really well by the book, but the thing that makes you a really good safety is anticipating where the soft spots are going to be, where somebody might have made a mistake, understanding. And I feel like he's really starting to get a feel for that stuff. And on both those plays inside of 2 minutes in the first half, kudos to D'Amico and Matt Burke for really all day shifting the coverages, changing it at the snap. But then Kalen understanding and being aware of where the opportunity was without taking any extra risks to do it. That was a great performance out of Kalen Bullock.
It was a great performance out of Bullock and the defense as a whole, and you're absolutely right. The Dolphins were supposed to be the team that was confusing everybody with all the eye candy.
Right.
The Texans, I thought, did a really good job of saying, oh, we'll confuse the hell out of you.
They bit on no eye candy.
No eye candy, man.
They didn't. They were like, oh, let me see your ID before I bite on that play. I'm not taking you to that dance, young lad.
We've not talked about the offense at all in the open here. I promise you that we will, because I know there's people out there frustrated with it. They did what they needed to do yesterday with the, you know, room service opportunities that they got. They scored points. I will say this, you know, the Dolphins running the ball on first down so much and getting into second and nine.
Yeah.
I'm like, dang, this feels really good. Oh, yeah. That's how it feels when other teams are going against the Texans all the time.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, every time they're running the football, it feels like a gift from the heavens.
Right. Yeah, and the Dolphins haven't been running the ball well. And, yeah, that's one of the other big stories yesterday was, obviously, you got Titus Howard at left guard, you've got Blake Fisher at right tackle, and I was very pleased early on to see that the Texans didn't have to give Blake Fisher a whole lot of help. I mean, and through the first three quarters, he played really well. That sack that he gave up, he didn't give up that sack that Chop Robinson got. He had done a good job blocking him, you know, and then CJ escapes the pocket, and then Chop Robinson gets it on the scramble drill. Yeah. Then in the fourth quarter, I think the holding call, I believe, was in the fourth quarter.
I think it was
Blake
too,
Fisher, or at least late in the third quarter. And then he allowed that sack on Chop Robinson, and I didn't realize it until watching on the TV copy. I'm pretty sure that Chop Robinson was offsides on that. He got
a big jump.
He got at least a full step into the backfield.
Yes.
And not so that's Blake Fisher did well for what my expectations
were. Happy with Blake Fisher this morning.
He had a couple of plays. The biggest guy I was worried about versus him was
Calais Campbell
because he's so strong.
Yeah.
And Blake Fisher still kind of looks like a teenager, and I thought he held up pretty well versus Calais Campbell.
All right, Texans are AFC South champs. That would normally dominate the show, but there was a trade Friday afternoon that we've got to dig into here with the Astros. Kyle Tucker traded. This is our first chance to weigh in on it.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll weigh in on that. The big trade, are you in favor of it? Do you approve it? Do you disapprove? Are you disappointed? Are you nervous that the window is closing? We'll get into all that, and we'll circle back to the Texans as well. Headlines, 7 o'clock hour. We'll do our acknowledgments. We'll go back through all the big plays. It's a fun Monday, man. The Texans are back in the postseason for the second year in a row. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
We will we'll get to the Kyle Tucker trade in just a second. That happened Friday afternoon, so Seth and I have not had a chance to weigh in on that yet, and I know it's something that people were talking about all weekend long. Question on the text page. Can we get an injury update? Is that guy's neck broken? The guy there, the texter is talking about is Grant DuBose, the wide receiver who got shellacked by Kalen Bullock on a play that was, you know, what a dirty play. It was a bang-bang play, and it was he got penalized for it.
And I'm guessing Kalen will probably get fined for that. It was more of like the classic, okay, guys going to the ground. Bullock didn't lower his head, but he didn't move it out of the way, and that's the way these things are these days. I hadn't noticed a whole lot of widespread outrage, oh, this is the worst person on earth, at all compared to what we saw with Aziz Alshire.
Okay. Get Up starts at 7 o'clock.
That's true, yeah.
First Take comes on at 9 or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know if there's something about, you know, Kalen obviously doesn't have the same track record. He hasn't had time to build one up as Aziz Alshire.
Yeah.
But for whatever it's worth, and then I think the other part of it, too, was, I mean, part of it is, all right, Tua, like, what are you doing?
I think Tua's getting as much heat as Kalen Bullock is.
What are you doing to this kid? Yeah. And not to, I don't want to turn this into a sensationalistic thing or anything. It was scary inside the stadium.
Very scary.
It was really, there were a lot of hushed tones all over the place.
There were men in suits on the field. I mean, that's, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, and they'd cut his shirt off.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny? A lot of people asked me after, when people like kind of clapped as he was being carted off the field, and it does feel weird because it's clearly like, oh, it's not like he's popped up and he's waving to the crowd or anything.
He wasn't. He was strapped down.
I always feel like, because I've been in that situation a few times in the crowd, I feel like that's the appropriate thing. I mean, it's the only way to really show support for, like, emotional support or, like, hey, let's step outside the lines here for a minute and forget about the football game.
It's totally what it
is. Yeah, yeah. So I thought it was scary. It was scary.
Yep. So people asking for an update. The update that's okay. The update was he's in stable condition.
Yeah.
So it was a good update.
He wasn't moving or anything, you know, and it's one of those, like, gosh, he'll get, you know, you hope he doesn't have a horrible concussion, but really, you hope it's not a neck injury.
They had equipment out there, man. Like, it was a dicey situation, but it sounds like he's going to be okay. He stayed here in Houston last night at a hospital, obviously, and he's in stable condition. One more text, and then we'll get to King Tuck. Because the NFL hates our franchise, are we doomed to yet another noon Saturday wild card game? Okay, first of all, it's not noon, it's 3:30.
Yeah.
They play in the 3:30 window on Saturdays. I double checked to make sure last year's game indeed was at 3:30 Central
Unless
time against the Browns.
From, you know, San Francisco or something.
Right,
yes.
Right, 3:30 Central time. Yeah, right. Unless you're on the Odyssey app, and we appreciate that.
I'm trying to think, who's 3 hours behind us in the U.S.? Is Alaska at one point?
I don't know. Hawaii's like five.
Yeah. There's probably a part of Alaska that's...
maybe.
Apologies to our listeners in Western Alaska.
Anchorage, in South Anchorage, yes.
That's probably the Western, even further. Anchorage would be Pacific. Let's go.
Okay.
Kyle Tucker.
Let's go. Kyle Tucker, let's get to it here. Kyle Tucker traded Friday afternoon to the Chicago Cubs.
And Central time zone.
Central time. Yeah, so this is going to be easy for everybody listening on the Odyssey app in Chicago. Let's the basics of the trade. And if you're a Astros fan, I'm sure you've seen it by now. But just in case, Kyle Tucker goes to the Cubs for Isaac Paredes, Wyszynski, Hayden Wyszynski from Cy Fair. He's from Cy Fair, who's going to be in the rotation, it sounds like. He got kind of juggled back and forth from the bullpen to the rotation for the Cubs last year. It sounds like he's been told he's gonna get a shot at the rotation.
I saw a lot of people from Chicago say, oh, wow, when he gets into that pitching system, wow, this could be really good for him.
A lot of the advanced stats favor him becoming pretty good here with the Astros. And then Cam Smith is the big, shiny prospect prize.
And that was
deal.
The guy that the
first round pick, people, third baseman.
People from Chicago were saying that they really don't want to part with Cam Smith. So when I saw Cam Smith as part of the trade, that was kind of the stamp of like, okay, this, it works for me. This value, at least they got somebody that the other side was at least acting like they really didn't want to part with.
Yep. Let's hear from Dana Brown. Dana Brown explained the trade in a Zoom call to the media on Friday afternoon. And then dig into what our thoughts are on this. Here was Dana Brown explaining the Kyle Tucker trade.
Sometimes there's an opportunity where you trade a really good player to get back multiple pieces, and it doesn't affect that current calendar year, and then you have a chance to be even better in the future. And so, you know, I feel like this is one of those moves. The window is definitely still open. I mean, we have a really good rotation. Our infield is going to be good. We have a good catcher. Our bullpen is still going to be good. Look, make no mistake, we're still going to compete. And this is probably one of those moves that I think in the future people will see and understand, like, yeah, wow, I understand it now. I get it.
Okay. Conspicuous by their absence in his summary of the team is the outfield.
I know. Yeah, you just don't even bring it up. Don't
catcher's good.
It.
We got a great equipment manager. Have you seen the post game spread that we have in the food room?
Unrelated. We're moving the outfield walls, all of them, in 30 feet. There we go.
Yeah.
Jordan Alvarez.
He's gonna have 80 home runs.
They're gonna move the right field wall into like 200 feet.
There we go. That'd be beautiful. This is, for me, Seth, I don't know, like my feeling in seeing the trade on Friday, even we knew it was coming. This is like the first tangible, like, the dynasty is over type feeling that I'm getting. I'm not saying like they're not competitive anymore, but this is like, these are moves that teams that are at the tippy top do not make. Mm-hmm. The Astros were never making moves to trade core guys for multiple.
They strung it out. They pushed it.
Springer, you can walk.
They turned down a lot of potential compensation.
Because they're winning 105 games a year, and they're an elite team. They're not an elite team.
And they knew they were depleting the farm system. In a lot of ways, the Astros they're kind of operating like an NFL team that knows they've got a good core, like the San Francisco 49ers. Mm-hmm. So they're spending a lot of money, and they know they're going to have to pay for it at some point. Mm-hmm. But, man, we want to keep this core together. We're just going to we'll pay this money in the form of prospects that we don't gain. Yeah. Like, there's an opportunity cost. So, it was a big changing of the tides. And I don't know, it'd be interesting to know exactly how much of it was Dana convincing Crane to go along with it versus, something they recognized on their own. But this is another step towards feeling like, okay, this is Dana Brown's team. To me, it felt more like, all right, man, they're letting Dana Brown run the show.
That's a good observation. And yet...
speculation.
Yet... still second on the odds board to win the American League after the trade.
Yeah.
They're not plus 450 anymore. They're plus 600, but they are still the number two team in the American League. They're kind of being held up right now by the fact that the American League ain't all that strong.
Right. And I think, too, my feeling is, and I think a lot of people felt this way, is that, all right, if you do this Tucker trade, logically it makes more sense that these discussions they're having about Bregman with teams like the Yankees are probably not just for the hell of it. I'm way more pessimistic about the possibility of keeping Bregman.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially when you hear the rumors of them being in on Arenado.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so the Astros are in on Arenado, and they're openly talking with other teams about Bregman.
Yeah.
Which if you did the Tucker thing, Tucker was the guy where you think, okay, this is a guy that I trust is going to be healthy into his mid-30s. Bregman, I don't feel that much about that way about, and like I don't think they're gonna stretch any more for Bregman than they in their minds knew they wouldn't stretch for Tucker.
I think they're dug in. I definitely think they're dug in terms of years. I feel like it's more years than money that Jim Crane is is. If you had to ask him what's more important in giving a guy a long term deal, the number of years or the amount of money, I think it's the number of years. But neither is gonna be great for Bregman. Like he's gonna be super expensive. I'm planning for life after Bregman here. Someone's saying, Sean, can we please bring in a first baseman? I think that's the wait and see with Isak Paredes. You know, if there's a move to be made at third base, then he can play first base for you.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a move to be made for a first baseman, he can play third base. That's what makes so much sense about this trade. I'm fine with the Tucker trade.
Like the way all of this in trading, it's exactly the way you would look if you didn't know anything about the Astros at all. Okay. You're trading away an all-star outfielder. You're fixing some of the issues on the infield if Bregman leaves. But wow, there's a big glaring bunch of holes in the outfield right now.
Yeah, there are. Now that's an issue. I'm going to need a lot of expensive beer at the games.
Yeah, and I guess
the starting outfield is Mauricio Dubon, Jake Myers, and Chaz McCormick.
Yeah, I guess my little hypothetical should be actually that they're going to push the outfield walls back.
The hypothetical would be that they get to move them in when they're up at the plate, and they get to push them back when they're on defense.
The world's first movable outfield walls.
It's the golden outfield wall. Yeah, they're the only ones that get it. The golden outfield wall that gets retracted when you're on defense and gets moved in when you're on offense. That would be beautiful. Where is Kyle Tucker? We've watched a lot of Astros walk out the door. Where's King Tuck for you in the pantheon of golden era Astros?
Oh boy, that's a I don't know. Ninth?
I took the
many.
Interesting you say that. You know, Nick Wright likes to do this thing, our former colleague, where he builds pyramids for this stuff, where somebody's at the tip, you know, in case of Nick, it's always Patrick Mahomes at the tippy top of quarterbacks. I think he calls it Mount Mahomes. I did the service of doing a pyramid for the Astros, Nick Wright style. Tippy top of the pyramid for the Golden Era is obviously Jose Altuve, right? He's number one. I think the next level of the two guys there, Seth, and I think you would agree with this, and I think Brandy would agree with this. Alex Bregman, George Springer.
God.
That's the level right below Altuve of the next two guys who are like the faces of that era.
I guess if we're only going through, the faces
like
of that era.
2017 through now. Era. Yeah, the entire era.
Yeah, because I want to go
Springer World Series MVP.
I always feel like Dallas Keuchel gets the shaft. When it comes
you got the
to,
shaft on my pyramid. I'm just going to tell you
like,
right
there's
now.
Something that for I weighted extra heavily for the early guys.
Yeah.
Lance McCullers is way up there on my list.
You'll be is he really? Okay.
Yeah.
So he yeah, so
dude, the 24 straight curveballs, yeah.
Yeah, that's
that was before anybody took the Astros seriously.
You'll probably take umbrage then as I get lower on here, but I think Altuve is at the tippy top. The next level is Bregman and Springer. You'll be happy to know the next level for me, Seth, as an early golden era enthusiast that you are, Correa, Verlander, and Yuli Gurriel.
Okay.
That's the next level for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Tucker's on that fourth level. I put Yordan there, Tucker. I had Jeremy Peña in there just because, you know, ALCS MVP and World Series MVP. I had Presley in there because he's you know, guys that were, you know, that had been there for a long time. He wasn't here for the 2017 championship, Presley. But he's been the closer. But I think you're right. I would probably replace him with McCullers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, Lance had some big games that he pitched, even in the seasons after the 2017. Yeah. You know, there was a period of time there where
he came back before
he got hurt.
I mean, he just played through partially torn tendons and ligaments at times where other guys wouldn't have.
But is Tucker appropriately placed? I think he's behind Altuve and Bregman and Springer and Correa.
Yeah.
Behind Verlander and Yuli.
Yeah.
Well, he's right there with Yordan probably.
I'd put Yordan above him just because of playoff heroics and consistency.
Yeah, yeah, the big home
the
runs.
The playoffs factor in big time there.
Yeah, you're right.
So,
that
feels fine.
They're losing a big piece, man.
I'm not furious about any of those.
They're losing a little chunk of their soul. Regular season soul.
They lost their appendix like Cade Stover did.
Right. The trade to the Cubs was an emergency appendectomy. Although that would imply that Tucker is useless.
Right.
And he's certainly not useless.
And we decided yesterday in the pregame show that emergency appendectomy
redundant.
Is redundant. Because I'm sure they happen, but the planned appendectomy, you don't seem to hear about nearly as much.
No. We need to go die on that hill. You know what I mean? Like, we need to get rid of the word emergency in front of appendectomy.
I also predicted yesterday in the pregame, because Cade Stover's a farm kid, that he'll have a faster comeback from his appendix.
He'll be at practice today.
Yeah. Then, he'll have a faster comeback than, like, Joe Burrow did.
There you go. All right. Headlines. AFC South champs for the Houston Texans. Big headline in the NFL for the Texans' next opponent that we will get to, and a whole lot more. Headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Stroud takes the knee, 30 seconds to go. That's going to do it. The Texans beat Miami. They clinch a winning season, and they can clinch the division if the Colts lose to Denver later. What a day for the Houston defense. Derek Stingley Jr., two picks, including the one that ended the Dolphins' final threat. The Chiefs are next. Wow.
D'Amico Ryans called that second pick by Derek Stingley Jr. maybe the best play he's ever seen in the post-game locker room. In the post-game locker room speech.
In the history of football.
In D'Amico Ryans' history of football. In the history of football through the eyes of D'Amico Ryans, he said to the team after the game, we'll have that audio a little later in the show, that might have been the best play, the second interception where he went up for it. And I thought Clint Sterner put it really well. By the way, the headline here is Texans are AFC South champs. All the speculation you heard from Mark Vandermeer on that call, that final call, obviously he was speculating because the Broncos-Colts game took place after the Texans game yesterday. The Colts did the honors of laying down for the Broncos in the second half yesterday to the tune of getting outscored 24-0 in the second half. Broncos beat the Colts 31-13. Combined that with the Texans beating the Dolphins 20-12 and the Texans, indeed, for the second year in a row, are AFC South champs. The big plays in this game yesterday largely came from the defensive side of the football. A strip sack fumble from Will Anderson that led to points, an interception from Kalen Bullock that led to points, and then two Derek Stingley Jr. interceptions that extinguished drives in Texans territory in the fourth quarter of that game. And I thought Clint Sterner put it great in the postgame show yesterday, Seth, describing the second interception from Stingley. And we're going to hear all of these highlights through the voice of Mark Vandermeer at the top of the hour. But Stingley going up with Tyreek Hill for that ball. First of all, the ball skills to get his head turned to see it in the first place, as you pointed out earlier. But then Tyreek Hill, I think, thinking he was going to catch that ball.
Right, right.
And then most backs, Clint said this in the postgame. I thought he's absolutely right. He said most backs would have been perfectly happy with just jarring the ball out and having it be a PBU, and that's it. Stingley was not going to be satisfied with anything less than coming down with that football.
Right, and I think also, you know, early in the game, Stingley undercut a route and broke up a pass that, man, it looked risky. And you're wondering if they're going to exploit that at some point with a double move down the field. And Reginald Atatula and I were talking about this during the game, about kind of his ability to bait or trail comfortably. That there's times where he looks like he might be beat, and then you realize, like, no, he's in perfect control. He's just riding that hip pocket, and he feels like he can make a play on the ball if he needs to. So, yeah, he did a great job versus Tyreek Hill yesterday.
Yeah.
And he was targeted the most he's been targeted all this season. They ended up with 12 points out of it.
D'Amico Ryans was asked yesterday, were you guys playing with a level of desperation on Sunday?
I felt our team, like, throughout this week, getting back from the bye and just throughout this game, I felt like our team was calm and confident. And that's where we have to be. It's, you know, we don't panic or we don't lose our minds in the chaos that's in front of us. And for us, if we remain calm and we just play together and focus on what we can control, then we'll be in a good spot. So that desperation piece is every week in NFL. Everyone is desperate to win. But even though you're in desperation mode, you still have to go out, execute, and remain calm.
We got to point out, I mean, this is a Dolphins offense that had been playing very, very well of late.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as they weren't in frigid, cold temperatures in Green Bay, they were scoring over 32 points for the last month in each of their games.
The last four games, they scored 31 or more points in three of them, and the Packers held them to 17 points.
Yeah.
So, if it weren't for that offsides and that field goal attempt in the first half, they would have held them to, what, nine points? Now, offensively, I was happy with Blake Fisher at right tackle. They obviously did not move the ball as well. You know, it's another game where, man, the defense takes the ball away four times and you only end up scoring 20 points.
Yeah.
The part that was really good was C.J. Stroud to Nico Collins in the end zone.
That's it.
You know,
that's what we've been saying. Like, it's Joe Mixon couldn't really get on track yesterday. He did lead them in receiving, but it was five catches for 33 yards.
They had a potential for a deep strike to John Mechie.
Yes,
but Mechie, I can't excuse that drop away. That's the thing one of the things that's held John Mechie back is that he doesn't have sure hands.
Right.
And that was a very, very catchable football.
Very catchable football. Now, thank God they ran the fake punt on the very next play, and they ended up scoring on that drive anyways. Yeah.
But in terms of the offense moving the ball, there were some missed opportunities there, but we've seen enough of those missed opportunities that I can't just write them off.
Yeah. You know? Let's hear from CJ. CJ Stroud talking about the functionality of the offense yesterday.
Yeah, you know, that was a focus of mine, you know, that we have to learn how to score touchdowns off of turnovers, but, you know, more importantly, just points in general, just getting points. And, you know, we're able to do that, I think, on every turnover, even the fake that we ran on fourth down, which I thought was a great call by Frank. You know, shout out to Frank and them boys and Weeksy on the great snap. But, you know, it's complimentary football, you know, our defense getting turnovers like that and be able to reward them. And, you know, I feel like we definitely could have been better in a lot of ways, but, you know, happy with the win and, you know, got to just move on.
If they take out the fake punt yardage, because that's not regular offense.
Yeah, that's special teams yardage in my mind.
Yeah, it counts as part of their total yard. Even if you leave it in, they were under 200 yards of total offense.
Right.
Take it out, 35 yards. They had 146 total yards. Make no mistake, if they lost this game, we would be livid about the offense right now.
Right, right. No, I think my positive feelings were more that, okay, look at this on the sum total of it. Can this be the type of team that if they go on a ferocious defensive streak, they could be like a Lovie Smith Bears team that makes the Super Bowl with nothing but takeaways? And it feels like they could be.
If they cash in on their opportunities like they did yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they got the strip sack fumble from Will Anderson, and that set up a short touchdown drive. They got the pick six from Kalen Bullock. Didn't have enough time to run as many plays as they would have liked to. There's only 13 seconds left in the half. They settle for a field goal. That's fine. And then I'm even going to call the fake punt a short field that the offense was set up with.
Yeah.
Seeing as they were set up to punt the football.
Yeah.
So that set them up. That plus a penalty put them at the 4-yard line, 5-yard line, or whatever. And they cashed in when they were down there. Look, if they're going to cash in on all the turnovers that are getting caused, they might be able to pull off a couple upsets on the road in the
playoffs. Right, right.
You know? So.
And then especially versus like all the, you've seen Josh Allen. You know, the Chiefs play everybody really, really close and tight. There's not a team individually that I feel like, oh, there's no way they can beat them. It's a matter of in the playoffs, you got to do it consecutively, week to week. And it's really hard to really rely on even the best defenses ever in terms of taking the ball away. At some point, there's going to be a game where you don't get those turnovers.
Yeah, like a lot's got to go right if you're only going to get 200 yards of offense, for sure. Around the NFL, the Broncos did beat the Colts yesterday. Colts took a 10-0 lead in this game in Denver. And then I felt like I was infringing on your gimmick in the post-game show, Seth. I was checking on Anthony Richardson's completion percentage.
What did it end up being?
It was below 50%, for
sure. I saw some of the advanced stats, like EPA and all this. It was like the lowest, with the second worst performance by any quarterback since the year 2000.
It was bad. They got a lot of soul searching to do in Indianapolis about that quarterback, man, for sure.
Did he not tap out at all?
No, he played the whole game. Yeah, he played the whole game. Good job, Anthony Richardson.
Anthony Richardson, you stayed in there.
The other big news that affects the Texans, Patrick Mahomes left the Chiefs' win over the Browns with what's being categorized as a high ankle sprain and a diagnosis of week to week for Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, significant, I'll believe it when I see it.
This week they play the Texans.
He does this every year. Oh, the courageous Pat Mahomes battling his way through an ankle injury that seemingly might not be as bad as his facial expression says.
It is interesting because the Chiefs, like the Texans, play the following Wednesday.
Yeah.
They have a 2-game lead in the AFC right now, but the Bills have the head-to-head over the Chiefs, so it's really like a game and a half lead over the Bills. So that's kind of precarious. The Bills do not play anybody good the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Do you think Mahomes plays on Saturday?
I think so, yeah. He's got a history of this.
He said he could have come back in this game if he had to.
Yeah, no, they just...
You're disgusted with Mahomes.
Let's find out
right
if
now.
He was mic'd up, you know. And, okay, Andy, I need to be in there, Andy. I'm a warrior, dang it.
Andy, I want to go in and be him. Yeah. I'm supposed to be him. I want to go in and be him. He's like, no, Patrick. You cannot go in. We need you for the long
haul. Yeah, the other thing, too, I get more and more people saying that the league's out to get the Texans by scheduling him in this stretch. No, if anything, this was a sign of respect.
Like, yeah.
The Ravens, the Chiefs, the Texans, and who are the Chiefs playing on Christmas Day?
The Steelers.
Yeah. I mean, like, no, those are, like, the league's not out to get those teams.
When they scheduled those games, they were then putting them up for sale.
Yeah.
To an outlet. They didn't have Netflix to broadcast those games when the schedule came out. So they wanted sexy matchups to sell to eventually Netflix.
Right, right. So if anything, and
it's a compliment.
Yeah, if they thought that, like, oh, they'll be the whipping boy for, like, no, there's not a team out there that it's a sign of respect, if anything else.
Yep.
Now go earn that respect, damn it.
No kidding. Well, they'll get their shot next two games, man, for sure. Kyle Tucker traded on Friday. If you missed that, Seth and I talked about it in the previous segment. That's what the Odyssey Rewind feature is for, and our podcast, the Odyssey app in general. Download it today. Up next, we will relive the big plays from yesterday through the voice of Mark Vandermeer. The plays that sealed the game, the plays that provided all the twists and turns yesterday afternoon. And then at 7:20-ish, we will do Acknowledge Me. We got a lot of acknowledgments from big performances over the weekend. That's coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Hey, it is an AFC South Championship Monday here. Reaction Monday. Texans are AFC South champs, second year in a row. Got a lot of acknowledgments to get to a little later on in this segment. Let's relive yesterday through the voice of Mark Vandermeer. There were some big plays in this game. Not a ton of them on offense, except for two Nico Collins touchdowns, both of which spoiler alert, you'll hear. But the first real big play of the game, and you knew the Texans were going to probably need some turnovers where you could see how it was going offensively for them. Will Anderson Jr. showing up again, man. This is great to see. This got him to double digits in sacks for the first time in his career, and he got the fumble to go with it.
On third and four, Tua, pressure arriving, Tua. Ball is out as Will hits him. It's loose, and the Texans are going to pick it up. Saddle all over the football. Houston with the takeaway. Strip sack.
And Tim Settle's been a nice pickup too, man.
Tim Settle, on that play, I think DeNico Autry was rushing inside. On a lot of those sacks and pressures, it was multiple guys coming clean. Yeah, no, Tim Settle. Yeah, I told you yesterday, I love watching Tim Settle rush up the middle because it's one of those videos you see on TikTok of a hydraulic press smashing something that, when it just slow, it kind of, it's not moving with great speed or anything, but it's not slowing down at all. And then all of a sudden the bowling ball shatters. And that's what, Tim Settle and the entire front four did a really good job yesterday just making life uncomfortable for Tua. And as we thought, it probably wasn't going to mean a whole bunch of sacks because they get rid of the ball so fast.
Yeah.
Tua just throws a bunch of screens, basically. But they were affecting the plays.
The two sacks, though, they had three sacks. One of them was Tua running out of bounds with a yard behind the line of scrimmage. The two other sacks were completely impactful. The one you just heard from Will Anderson, that was midway through the second quarter, and it set up a touchdown that you're about to hear. And then the Danielle Hunter sack, man, to go from first and 15 to second and 25 on the second to last drive of the game, putting them in the shadows of their own goalposts there. I mean, that snuffed that drive out.
I would say, though, even the one where Tua ran out of bounds, that was a legit sack in that it wasn't like a designed rollout he just, like, he got flushed out of
Danielle
the pocket.
Danielle chased him out of bounds. Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
That was a half Tua Tua, half Danielle Hunter joint.
Right. A few plays later, you get the Texans recover that fumble. Tim Settle jumps on the ball. They get the ball at the Miami 28. And then four plays later, bam.
Here's CJ taking the snap, looking. CJ scrambling to the left, squaring up. CJ throwing back in the end zone. Caught, Nico Collins. Touchdown, Houston. Stroud with the improvisation to find Collins in the end zone.
That was a Mahomes throw.
Oh, yeah, back across his body.
Dude, and through a maze of people, at least from where we were sitting up top.
Away from his body, not
across
his body.
Yeah, he's running to his left.
So I watched the TV broadcast of that afterwards, and one thing Trent Green had pointed out was that CJ might have had, maybe should have thrown it to Ogunbowale over the middle. In rewatching that play, I'll give CJ it's weird to say I'll give him a pass on a play in which he threw a touchdown, but we also want him to get rid of the ball on time and everything. That was a three-man rush, and I think CJ's learned this lesson as a young quarterback that, man, with a three-man rush, you got somebody dropping off, and usually that's where quarterbacks end up throwing a pick to a defensive lineman or somebody right over the middle that they just don't see. So with a three-man rush, he did have time. But I think something I saw yesterday that I was comfortable with was that as the play was extended, CJ was fleeing okay pockets just to try to stretch things out and get the scramble drill going. And that play was similar to that. The pass protection was good. I think he just didn't want to throw into danger with a three-man pass rush over the middle, and then he ends up finding Nico.
Things got crazy at the end of the half in this game. The Texans were up 10-6. And they had the ball. They had the ball under 2 minutes. They got the ball back right after the two-minute warning. And they drive to about midfield. And then, you're driving, you're trying to get a field goal. They're getting the ball to start the second half. So you try to get a score, and then you got a chance to score again. And there's a miscommunication between center and quarterback.
CJ bobbles the snap. There's a fight for it, and the Dolphins might have it. There's a scrum, and Miami comes out of the pack with it. It's Brooks. He's got it left side, and he goes out of bounds along the sideline inside the Houston 40. Disaster on that play.
Disaster is the perfect word for it. Yeah, CJ wasn't ready for the snap.
He just wasn't ready for the ball. That was it felt a little bit like the first half of the season when there was just so many glaring miscues and miscommunications on the offensive line
that
unfortunate, but obviously, like, not Who knows whether it was Patterson or CJ's
fault? Right, right. Yeah. So you're thinking, okay, they're at least going to go up 13-6. You get 15 more yards from where they were at when they fumbled, and you're in range for Kyahmi Fairbairn. Instead, the Dolphins get the ball back, first and 10 at the Houston 38, because when Jordan Brooks recovered it, he was able to run it into Texans territory. That was an impressive fumble recovery, too. He reached down with one hand and picked it up like a loaf of bread.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
It was impressive, yeah.
I'll give my grudging praise of him. Him and Achan reeling in Kalen Bullock.
Yeah, yeah, he returned it 14 yards. However, a couple of plays later, as the Dolphins got a penalty on first down, so now they're back at about midfield. A couple of plays after that, Tua Tagovailoa picked off by Kalen Bullock.
Tua fakes the toss, looking, firing over the middle, and it's intercepted. Here's Bullock to his left, 40, 50, to the sideline, shot out of a cannon, 30, 20, 15, 10, and wrestled down inside the 10. Catch and run, Kalen Bullock, what a pick.
He was shot out of a cannon. Like he when he caught that, I don't know if Kalen Bullock ran track in high school.
He looked like a track runner, yeah.
Angle, like all he had to do was run straight.
And he was striding out, yeah. And he just moves it, but we could see, I went back, I watched the TV copy during the break, and the TV didn't do justice to how fast Achan was running to catch up to him.
I know.
I mean, it wasn't like he had a really good angle on him or anything. And then, I mean, it was still a little bit of Achan had to kind of break down a little bit. Bullock almost deked him. It was impressive. But the whole thing about that play, which was really cool, was on the previous series, Kalen Bullock missed an interception by just pouncing on a throw over the middle, and it was a dumb throw by Tua, and then they come back on the next series, and credit to D'Amico and Matt Burke, the way they were shifting and rotating the defensive backs at the snap, it confused Tua, and Tua thought that Kalen was going to be deeper on there, and I think in Tua's mind, he's like, I'm not going to make the same mistake, I'm going to throw shallow this time, but Bullock was right there. I mean, that was a great couple of series because they had set it up. And then even after it worked the first time and Kalen Bullock didn't come up with the interception, they just kept rotating the defensive backfield, and it fooled them on that play in a second straight series.
Can you imagine if you put Derek Stingley Jr.'s hands on Kalen Bullock? Like if he had Derek Stingley's hands, because he's dropped a few interceptions.
He's Omer Asik sometimes.
A little
out
bit.
There when
yeah. Like he's been. No, make no mistake. Kalen Bullock has been tremendous this year.
Yeah.
Five interceptions. Better than anything you could have imagined. As you pointed out earlier in the show, yesterday was a game where it wasn't going to be just about his playmaking ability, but about his football IQ, and he played very, very well as the single high safety.
I think he's established well enough now. His ceiling is very, very high. He could end up being a really good safety. For him to just take it up into genuinely elite, he's got to be on the jugs machine.
Jugs machine all off season long.
I want to see on the jugs machine for half an hour after practice. Jugs, jugs, jugs.
Jugs, jugs, jugs. Absolutely, yeah. We chant,
jugs, 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 jugs. We're at a frat party, and girls start acting crazy. We're like, no. We want Kalen to leave the party. Stop it, you harlots. We're just asking for Kalen to leave the party and go to the jugs machine.
Bunch of strumpets, yeah. All right, so second half hits, and the Texans get the ball to start the second half. They move the ball a little bit. You know, Tank Dell gets a catch. Joe Mixon gets a catch. They're moving into Miami territory. They get a third and two at the Miami 44. And, man, CJ launches that ball, and it's like, oh, we're going to get a long touchdown here to start the second half. Mm-hmm. We're going to get the second half scoring out of the way early.
Right,
here.
Yeah.
We don't even need to talk about them not scoring in the second half of games. We're going to get out of the way early, and then, bloop, off of John Metchie's hands on a third and two. So it's fourth and two at the Miami 44. Earlier in the game, there had been a fourth and two or a fourth and one, I think a fourth and two, that D'Amico chose to kick the field goal instead of go for it.
Mm-hmm.
This time, he lined up for the punt, but ultimately chose to go for it.
And it's a fake. And running around the right side, Dare, 40, 35, 30, 20, 15, and ripped out at the 10. The ball comes out. Oh, no.
He may be down. He was down, I think.
The Dolphins say they have it. There's a big scrum.
Oh, I don't know now. Looking at the replay.
After review, the runner was down by contact.
Oh, he's down. His elbow's down.
He was way down. Okay.
The initial replay did look, or at least the way it is in the stadium, or sometimes you're watching the actual TV copy, yeah, like on delay.
Yep.
It did look like it was a legit fumble at first. Yeah. I thought for sure it was.
It was a quick review.
Yeah.
That review,
yeah,
didn't,
no,
take,
yeah,
long.
It was very clear once you watch the angle.
The right angle, yeah.
And Tommy Townsend shoved somebody and got away with it.
Did he?
Yeah, they flagged because that was they got the unsportsmanlike. The Dolphins got the unsportsmanlike.
Tommy's a nice guy. We had him on the postgame show in the preseason, and he's a super nice dude. But he can get a little chippy out there.
He's got a fiery side to him.
Remember he told that guy on the Steelers to catch the ball, biatch?
Yeah, well, and that was in the same preseason game where Tank Dell took a big hit on the sideline.
Yeah, from Cam Johnston.
Which, by the way, nice seeing Tank Dell out there as a returner.
Yes, it's not acknowledge me yet, and I don't have it in there for that. Quick pre-acknowledge me acknowledgement for Tank Dell as the punt returner.
Acknowledge me.
That is a very nice adjustment, yeah, by this team. They're obviously having a hard time getting Tank the ball this year for whatever, yeah, reason on offense. Him getting three or four touches in the return game, he's going to break one.
Yeah.
He's going to break one.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. And even on the end around yesterday where he doubled, it was almost like
two guys.
I wish it were designed that way. Yeah. The play didn't work. It tends to happen in the run game. And yet, he serpentined his way into it was a quadruple reverse end around.
Just not the way it was supposed to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got 15 yards.
So pre-acknowledgement.
Pre-acknowledgement.
Careful with that pre-acknowledgement. That's a
premature acknowledgement.
Sperm in there sometimes.
Premature acknowledgement, yes.
More potent than you think.
That fake punt, the Kalen Bullock interception and the fake punt by Dari, especially because they were within that, they call it, you know, the middle 8 minutes, last, yeah, four of the first half, first four of the second half, just felt like huge. They felt like the two biggest plays in this game.
Yeah.
Like the Texans keeping that momentum and then being able to score a touchdown from Nico Collins.
CJ fakes the give, boots out to the right. He's on the roll. CJ looking. CJ trying to buy some time, throws to the end zone. Caught! Nico Collins! Touchdown number two on the day.
What a player Nico Collins has become.
He and CJ made that. I mean, that was a semi-scramble drill. CJ was rolling out to his right.
It's extended play, right?
Yeah,
yeah, because
Nico's looking around for a dead spot.
And Robert Woods, like, lots of credit to Robert Woods for sticking with his, like, getting two bites in on that edge rusher.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was, and I can't remember, was it Chop Robinson? But it was... Yeah, that was a really good play by Robert Woods. Very scrappy.
And then Nico and CJ just made that look like a video game. Like,
yeah, that's the...
CJ just flips the ball to him, and Nico casually catches it and gets both feet inside the pylon there.
It's one of those things that if we lived in a different era, I would start to worry that maybe CJ is almost creating a scramble drill, sometimes intentionally, too much. Except that with Nico... They are so good in the scramble drill,
dude,
or in extending plays that when CJ leaves a clean pocket, I'm all right if he feels like he's got a good feel for what Nico's going to do and where the coverage is. I think a lot of times that's what they're looking for, and it's worked out in the red zone. They got to do something to score in the red zone.
I am telling you right now, I am most confident that the good things are going to happen when CJ rolls out to his right.
Yeah.
It feels like for whatever reason, he's just very comfortable keeping his eyes downfield and finding open guys.
Well, and especially if it's Nico. I think a lot of times when guys roll to the right, the problem is that at times it turns it into a half field, and it's a lot easier to cover a half field.
Yeah.
But if you've got a quarterback and can throw back across the formation safely, it opens things up a lot.
It does. Okay, so the Texans score there. They go up 20-6. And you think, like, okay, well, maybe this is the day that they just put the foot on the throat and we don't have to stress very much. The Dolphins get the ball back after that. They put together a really nice drive. They put together a 6.5-minute drive to get into the red zone. They got it first and 10 at the Houston 15. Eventually, though, 4th and 7 at the Houston 12, they had to settle for a field goal attempt. Thought the Texans did a really good job, Seth, of playing bend, don't break in this game, giving up a couple field goals. This would have been a third field goal, except penalty on MJ Stewart. And so now it's 4th and 2.
Yeah. And you know, one thing I would point out real quick is that, I mean, they were in single high coverage a lot. It wasn't a soft defense. I mean, part of it was that I think they were being very careful to keep everything in front of them. Right, yeah. But it was the Dolphins were having some success moving the ball.
Yeah, in that drive particularly, they moved it 78 yards. total on that drive. Fourth and seven, though, and so you're feeling like, okay, it's 20-6 at the time. Sanders makes the field goal. I can deal with 20-9. You're still up two scores.
Yeah.
Defense is playing well. We didn't know that Tua had a couple more turnovers in him at the time. Instead, MJ Stewart gets the penalty. The Dolphins accept the penalty, and then on the very first play, well, they only had one play. It was fourth and two. They throw into the end zone. Jonnu Smith, touchdown to the back of the end zone. Jonnu Smith's been incredible. He was the best thing they had going offensively yesterday, the Dolphins. They missed the extra point, so that felt like it was a little heat off. You know, to tie the game, the Dolphins need a touchdown and a two. But it's 20-12 at that point. Texans come back out, and their response to that is to go three and out and gain 1 yard.
Yeah.
So now the Dolphins have the ball back. They're once again moving it now, okay? And so now you're into late in the third quarter, into the fourth, and it's early fourth quarter, and the Dolphins have now driven for what could be a tying touchdown into the red zone. It's third and five at the Houston 20, and then this happens.
Tua in the gun. Here's the snap. Tua, quick fire, right side, and intercepted by Stingley. He's got it across the 15 and wrestled out of bounds by Hill. Derek Stingley Jr., the INT. He turns back Miami.
Just a massive play there, man. I mean, they are in the red zone. They're third and five at the Houston 20. And Stingley steps in and makes that pick.
And right you're there. Testing, I mean, you know, Tua's got to make something happen at that point. In a perfect world, you recognize, like, okay, well, that's Derek Stingley.
Right.
Am I going to throw a 50-50 ball up in the air against a shorter wide receiver? Probably not a good idea.
Right.
You should have found another option on that play.
Well, that was the first interception.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the first one.
We're going to hear the second one and acknowledge me in a second. But, yeah, like, Stingley... That was huge, man. Like the Dolphins were doing to the Texans what the Jags were doing to the Texans in the game before the bye week, which was the Texans had 23-6 lead. Now all of a sudden they're moving the football around on you.
That's poor listening by me. I knew we were coming up on Acknowledge Me, so I assumed you were playing the second interception, so I wasn't listening to the actual highlight.
That's okay.
Apologies to everybody.
That's okay. Apologize to Stingley. Don't apologize to me. You know, you gotta get this.
Well, Tua probably.
So Stingley gets the pick there, and then the Texans get the ball back, don't do much with it. The Dolphins get the ball back. They have to punt to the Texans. Danielle Hunter got a sack in that sequence. The Dolphins were getting penalties and whatnot. Dolphins eventually get the ball back with under 2 minutes to go to try to drive and get a tying touchdown. And this is where we will lead into Acknowledge Me, because the very first person that you can shift the music, Ben, give me the Acknowledge Me music. We acknowledge Derek Stingley Jr.
Acknowledge me!
Because he's the best cornerback in football right now, and this is what it sounded like, Stingley making the game-clinching play.
Tua takes the snap. Tua with pressure, throwing downfield to his right, and intercepted! Stingley again! That's going to do it! The Texans are going to beat Miami! Stingley's second pick seals the deal!
That's a good call.
And Houston will get its ninth win!
Good call by Mark Vandermeer there. That was an excellent call on that interception. Stingley's been great. He was phenomenal yesterday. Again, that was a play, Seth, where I think 99% of defensive backs... Well, okay, first of all, of the other 99% of defensive backs, 70% of those aren't running with Tyreek Hill down the sidelines, probably. Stingley's in his hip pocket down the sideline. I think most guys are happy to knock the ball away right there. Stingley coming down with that football, like, his hands are amazing.
Yeah, no, his ability on the... He's like DeAndre Hopkins, but on the defensive backside of things. Yep. Well, that's like they say about him all the time, is there, you know, he could have played wide receiver, you know, and it's just for this team... For this team, it would just end up being part of a disappointing offense if you were playing wide receiver. I prefer that he be a defense.
Complaining
he can do more for the offense as a defensive back than he can as a wide receiver.
Got to get the ball to Stingley. What the hell? Be complaining about that. Here's D'Amico Ryans after the game on the season that Derek Stingley Jr. is having.
He's definitely, to me, that play he makes there to end the game in 2 minutes, that's a big-time play, and not a lot of players can do that, so I know all the games aren't over, but I think he's very deserving of player of the week, player of the month. He's done an outstanding job of just when teams even try to challenge him, like, he's going to go get the football, right? And can't be more proud of Sting just for what we ask him to do. He steps up to the He steps up every week. No matter what we ask him to do, he steps up, and he continues to grow as a player, a pro, and make the plays we need to make. And there's not a better play I've seen than that play he made today.
Not a better play. He said it again in the locker room. We'll hear that in the next segment. D'Amico Ryans. He said that might be the best play I've ever seen, the Stingley interception right there. It's high praise, man. High praise. Stingley's going to be so rich. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. This would be the time they might extend him this offseason after, yeah.
After this season, he's going to make so much money. Oh, yeah. My God.
Well, that's where, you know, the most common comment I got yesterday was, why can't the Texans evaluate offensive line talent the way they do defensive back talent? Because, they've hit it out of the park so far. I mean,
Stingley, Petrie, Lassiter, and Bullock within three drafts of each other.
Yeah, yeah.
That is a high-performing young secondary lineup right there.
Right, right.
Two corners, two safeties.
Yeah, so with the offensive line, well, Blake Fisher and Jarrett Patterson,
What did you think of Fisher yesterday?
I thought he was, for the first three quarters, I was very, very pleased.
Yeah.
Even the sack that he gave up in the third quarter, he didn't give that up. He blocked Chop Robinson. It's just that CJ scrambled, you know. So that wasn't, he did a good job in pass protection there. The fourth quarter, he had a couple of rough snaps, but also that Chop Robinson sack where he got beat clean, where Fisher got beat clean around the edge.
Yeah.
Man, I think Robinson was maybe a full step or two offsides on that play, and they didn't catch it.
Yep.
And, you know, Blake, they probably didn't call it because Blake Fisher did a... I'll credit Blake Fisher's reaction time. Blake Fisher got started early, too. Like, if they wanted an egregious injustice, I think they probably could have... Like, they could have flagged him for a false start because he left... Because the defensive end was across the line of scrimmage. So it would have been defensive encroachment, but they just didn't get it. So I was very pleased. And the offense didn't have to scheme to help Blake Fisher nearly as much as I thought they would.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now the run blocking was not great yesterday. It was another, oh, great, here we go.
Yeah, that will not get acknowledged in this segment.
Yeah.
And that's we can talk about that after this segment. But it's really sad that I'm at a stage where, like, all right, they just ran for 23 yards on 12 carries again.
Yeah.
This is the standard, I suppose.
I mean, there's so many times where it's, credit Dalton Schultz for a couple of his receptions in the fourth quarter, but my God. I mean, there's times he's just standing around out there. He looks lost and confused.
They missed Cade Stover a little bit.
He's standing on one of C.J. Stroud's scrambles. Okay, Schultz doesn't have the one that he scrambled for a first down.
Yeah.
He didn't have anybody to block. So he just stood there.
Well, it's a good seat,
just
Seth.
Standing erect. And I'm like, at first I was thinking, like, well, maybe he's ready for the ball. Like, no, he wasn't. He wasn't down in a football position. He's just standing there watching.
Man, if I have a good seat, I like to sit and watch. Man, I don't blame Dalton Schultz. He's got a great seat right there to watch it.
I don't know. I don't understand why so many of these offensive players don't want to work.
Hey,
like, you're like, man, there's guys out there that you could hit.
It's true.
Don't do it.
Yeah, you're allowed to hit these guys.
Yeah.
D'Amico Ryans.
Acknowledge me.
I'm acknowledging D'Amico Ryans. AFC South champs, Brian, as a once average coach said.
Doesn't matter, Brian.
But
AFC South champions 2 years in a row, Brian.
Yep.
I forgot the but.
Yeah. Brian, that was Brian T. Smith he was talking to. This has not been an easy season, I don't think, even though their record is better now than it was through 14 games last year, because the offense has been just so slipshod. It's not been good. D'Amico's got some tough decisions ahead of him after the season is over, I think, if the offense continues to play this way. But, man, two division titles in two seasons after the two seasons that preceded him. Like, honestly, and I know, you know, D'Amico Ryans has coordinated an incredible defense this year. Special teams is great. He's changed the culture in that building. I know people are upset that the offense has taken such a big step backwards. But I will roll with D'Amico Ryans any day. That he got this thing turned around to the tune of two division titles his first 2 years. He's the sixth head coach in the NFL, Seth, since the year 2000 to win division titles in his first two seasons as a head coach.
I think
I'd love to know what the other ones inherited
right
before they got
there. There's so much common ground between the Lions and the Texans in terms of a turnaround that people didn't necessarily expect. The Lions are 2 years ahead in that process in terms of when they hired their head coach.
Yes.
And I always try to remind myself, okay, yeah, 2021 was when everybody started like making the Lions the darling team. But in 2022, it ended up being a lot tougher And they're kind of reminded, like, okay, we made some inroads last year, mm-hmm. but the Lions started off, they were, what, 2-6 to start the season or whatever it was. It wasn't a beautiful season. They didn't make the playoffs that year, but they're still making progress. And I think that's where the reality sinks in that, yeah, you're reminded that in the NFL, it's not so easy for to bring in free agents on offense and for it to all of a sudden click, and that also the quarterbacks, offensive linemen, everybody else, you gotta reinvent yourself every year.
Yep. So great job, D'Amico Ryans. You are acknowledged. Christian Harris.
Acknowledge me.
Christian Harris, it was good to see him back out there, man. I've not seen the snap counts yet. You had predicted that he would play about 50% of the snaps.
Yeah.
It may very well have been that. I just know that when he was out there, I just know that it felt like he played more than that. Because when he was out there, he was impactful. He had 8 tackles. He was around the ball quite a bit. My favorite thing Christian Harris did yesterday was after Derek Stingley Jr.'s second pick, ran straight up to Tyreek Hill, face mask, to say something to Tyreek Hill. Because you know Tyreek was probably chirping out there the whole game, you know, because whatever he said needed to be said.
Tyreek Hill would be a classic target for my psychological warfare.
Oh, yeah.
Of trying to blame Tua as much as possible. With running backs, I would always point out how bad the blocking was for him. They tackle a running yeah. back for a loss, and be like, dude, I'll tell you what, man, this ain't your fault. Like, these guys suck. So with Tyreek, I would be talking a lot of smack about Tua. Because
mm-hmm.
Tyreek, you can say whatever you want to Tyreek, it's not going to hurt his confidence in himself. But if you start planting the seeds about how awful Tua is, or it's somebody else's fault, or man, McDaniel, can you believe this guy's wearing capri pants? NFL head coach wearing capris. That's sabotage from within, Sean.
They play at times like a team whose coach wears capris. At times.
When he called that timeout at the end of the first half, and yeah. he was like running onto the sideline with his pants all jacked up and everything. Oh, what are you doing here, Mike?
Yeah.
At some point, give it up. You're almost 40. Come on.
Plus, it's football. What are you like? That's not. It's football. All right, let's keep it moving. Jonathan Taylor.
Acknowledge me.
I'm acknowledging you for failure, Jonathan Taylor, because it helped the Texans clinch a division yesterday. He may have, I don't want to say single-handedly, it's a 53-man game, but if there was a play that screwed the Colts' playoff chances yesterday, mm-hmm. it was Jonathan Taylor. And I don't know if you saw it or not.
I did not.
Okay, so here's what happened. The Colts are up 13-7 in this game at the half. They get the Broncos get the ball to start the second half. Bo Nix throws an interception. Bo Nix threw 3 picks yesterday. Yeah. Bo Nix was doing everything he could to keep the Colts in the playoff race. Throws an interception. Colts get the ball back. Second play, Jonathan Taylor into the clear for a 41-yard touchdown. However, does that Malachi Corley thing like he did against the Jets, dump the ball before the goal line? Ball rolls out of the end zone, like just perfectly rolls out of the end zone. They look at it. First, they called it a touchdown. They look at it on replay, and they say, runner dropped the ball before he crossed the goal line. It is a touchback. It's Broncos ball. The Broncos would go on to score the next 24 points in the game to win 31-13. Complete momentum shift, and I would submit that you go up 20-7 as the Colts, and now you're able to lean on Anthony Richardson in the run game and Jonathan Taylor in the run game being up 2 scores. Now they have to lean on Bo Nix throwing the ball in a game where he's thrown 3 picks already in the game. That lost the game for them. And so that I am acknowledging Jonathan Taylor for serving up an AFC South championship.
Thank you, Jonathan Taylor. Who did that to the Texans earlier in the season?
Malachi Corley on the Jets.
Yeah, that's boy, the Texans are good at that.
They're good at
benefiting from
teams.
Idiocy of other guys who are about to have one of the best plays of their life.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good That's job. A sign of poor coaching. Fire Shane Steichen.
Yeah, well,
I like him as a coach. I don't really. I'd prefer to have somebody else out there.
Yeah. You know, Clint, after the game, he's like, man, I would be telling all my guys, every single one of you, hand the ball to the referee when you cross the goal line. Clint's old school, man. Clint also hates when the guys do the windshield wiper point for the first down.
Oh, really? Does he
hates
really?
That. He hates
I didn't know.
It.
I never heard that. Yeah. I know he's a grumpy old man.
Yeah, he hates
it. It comes with fatherhood sometimes.
Yeah.
But he, I know
it's a first down.
Wait a second. But he wants them to hand the ball to the official after the touchdown?
After a touchdown. So that
no
means you
spiking or anything?
Nope, hand it to the official.
He's like 87 years old.
Well, because
the spike is has been around for a while.
They're not going to Corley it if they do it, or Taylor it if they do it, if they hand it to the official.
Can we meet somewhere in the middle?
Nope.
You know what I would say,
Chief.
You know what I would say, kind of like you do with your special teamers.
Yeah.
Sometimes, even if it's into the end zone, keep running through the end zone.
Yes.
I would say just touch the back of the end zone before you drop the ball.
There you go.
That's my standard. Okay. Then spike it or whatever. But as a matter of habit, touch the back of the end zone.
Okay.
Or do like the rugby players. The reason it's called a touchdown is because in rugby you touch the ball down.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's where you have to kick the extra point from.
That would be a fun, unique thing if somebody did that.
Right. Well, but yeah, so do that. Like, don't you can't spike it until you touch the ball in the end zone.
Okay. I'm going to acknowledge Andre Johnson.
I think
Seth is going to enjoy this bit of audio. You know, Andre was on the Pivot podcast last week. I don't know if you've seen any of the footage.
I saw that he was, and I have not seen any of the footage.
I'm going to play one clip right here, at least one. We'll see how friendly the clock is to us. Have to play this one. Andre Johnson, how was your one season in Seth's favorite city, Indianapolis?
The year I was in Indy, the first year after I left here, man, that was probably like one of the most miserablest times, you know, of my life. Like, I enjoyed being around the guys in the locker room, but as far as like outside of that,
right?
It was, man, that's the most I probably ever slept. Like,
I feel you.
You know, so those are the things I would say I would change. As far as like leaving here, no, I would have still stayed. They weren't going to let me leave anyway. I mean, I remember Rick Smith telling me, he said, "You're retired before I let you leave."
Yeah, well, as you recall, he left here after Bill O'Brien told him, you'll probably only get 40 catches here next year.
Right, yeah, he was phased out. And he ended up getting like 41 catches.
He had 41 with the Colts.
That was one of those tough, if Bill O'Brien were a better coach, you could have, in hindsight, at some point, looked at that as like, wow, those are the tough decisions that good organizations make.
Yeah.
But then ultimately, because it turned out the way it did, it just felt like, you just screwed him for no good reason.
You already love Andre Johnson. I would imagine that cut makes you love him even more.
I never slept as much as I slept when I was in Indianapolis.
Most miserable time in my career.
That's what prisoners aim for. Yeah, it's like, just give me some sleeping pills. I just want to sleep this out, you know? Like, just give me
days
some
off of the calendar.
It was like he was in prison.
Yeah,
he was in jail.
Yep, yep.
A Jim Irsay created gel.
Yeah, that's right, with a big horseshoe on the side of his head. Mm. So good job, Andre Johnson. Let's get this one more in here from college football over the weekend. Travis Hunter.
Acknowledge me!
Won the Heisman Trophy in the closest vote since 2009. This is what's crazy about this, is that it was the closest vote since 2009, and yet Travis Hunter had almost twice as many first place votes as the runner-up, Ashton Jeanty from Boise State.
Yeah.
So the people who were backing Travis Hunter for the Heisman backed him hard. They voted for him first place. But that tells me there were a lot of ballots that had Travis Hunter fifth or on it.
Yeah.
That it's that close overall, and yet that big a disparity in first place. And I wonder if, two things, Seth. I wonder if some of the voters had trouble. He's not the best wide receiver. He's not the best cornerback. I don't know what to do here. I also wonder if there's any backlash like Deion was talking about.
Is he a polarizing player because his coach is polarizing?
Colorado backlash.
Or did people feel like, you know, kind of the way people talked about Jadeveon Clowney in college. Like, did they feel like, no, he's getting too much recognition for just one thing?
One big
hit. A two-way player and all. With Hunter,
Travis
it would be
Hunter.
But you know who I blame? I think Shohei Ohtani, because of what you just said.
Okay.
If you look at the offensive stats, okay, Jonte is, you know, blows Hunter out of the water in a lot of ways. So I think people look at, oh, this is a two-way player in Travis Hunter, and yet he's not like the best at both things at the same time. That's what I expect. So they had said it at Shohei Ohtani, basically once in a century player, and because he doesn't measure up to Shohei Ohtani and his ability to be dominant on both sides, that's why they didn't think he was all that worthy of it.
Blaming the Heisman vote, the closeness of the Heisman vote, is Shohei Ohtani's fault.
There was Stephen A. Smith and I have in common is that we want to try to blame Shohei Ohtani for stuff.
For everything.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. All right, that was Acknowledge Me. We acknowledge big
Shohei Ohtani cannot be the voice of American football.
All right, we'll hear from D'Amico Ryans in the locker room in the next segment. And a name getting asked about in C.J. Stroud's post-game press conference, that we have not heard about in a long, long time. An update on an injured Texan from C.J. Stroud.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, here was D'Amico Ryans to his team in the locker room following yesterday's 20-12 win over the Miami Dolphins, which was part of a clinching scenario yesterday. Texans win, Colts lose. Texans wake up this morning, AFC South champs. Here's D'Amico Ryans in the locker room.
Hey, here we go, man. Hey, man, just couldn't be more proud of you guys, man. Like, we talk about grinding it out, and we weren't worried about anything about finishing. That was what it's all about, just us finishing, and the way you guys finished that game, man, can't be more proud of everybody in here. It took everybody. Nico stepping up, two TDs. Hey, O-line, great job all day, man. Great job protecting, giving us time. We talked about it. Great job. Great job. All right? And then defense. All right? Can't say enough. All right? Can't say enough. This guy, man, he got the most interceptions in the NFL in December. In the month of December, definitely, he better be defensive player of the week. Definitely better be defensive player of the month. All right, but yeah, Steve. Man, that's probably the best play I've ever seen. All right? Best play I've ever seen. For you right there to close it out, man, ask you to cover and man coverage and lock guys up, that's what you do. Keep doing that, man. Heck of a player, proud of you, man. Way to win the game for us right there. But, hey, man, on to the next one. All right, we came out, we handled business. On to the next one. That was 1-0. All right, we move on. All right, now Saturday, we got another one coming up.
Go, baby.
Same thing. All right, attack the preparation the right way. Everybody locked in mentally, physically. Let's take care of ourselves and let's be ready to take this show on the road to KC.
Cody Stutes mentioned this yesterday, and I kind of got confused because at first it didn't sound right. Up until yesterday, where Sauce Gardner came up with an interception.
The end of the game,
then yeah. He'd only had two interceptions in the last three seasons.
Yeah, I don't think he had any his rookie year when he was first-team All-Pro.
It was, he had two his first season.
Did he? Okay.
And then he had zero last year.
Zero last year.
And then he got one yesterday.
Yeah.
Interceptions are, for cornerbacks, interceptions are not nearly the whole story. But early on in their careers, really good cornerbacks tend to get interceptions as they're being tested, mm-hmm. and then they have fewer. But they have three and three complete seasons, and to even be mentioned in the same breath as Derek Stingley, not allowed.
No.
I mean, it's emphatically over. As long as Derek Stingley stays healthy, Sauce Gardner can't hold a candle to Derek Stingley.
Nope.
Derek Stingley is doing all the coverage stuff and everything, and yesterday he got targeted way more than he had in a long time. He got targeted heavily, and they paid for it. Like, Tua, you want to use that guy to throw to that guy? No, dumb.
Well, and it wasn't even like, Seth, he got the two picks, and he needed to get those two picks to offset the fact that all the other times they were targeting Tyreek Hill, he was running wild. Like, it's not like Tyreek Hill went six catches for 126 yards, but thank God Stingley got those two picks. Tyreek Hill was shut down all day. Yesterday, he had two catches for 36 yards. All three interceptions the Texans had in that game, the two by Stingley and the one by Kalen Bullock, Tyreek Hill was the player being targeted there. This defense that D'Amico Ryans has put together is doing a phenomenal job of carrying this team.
Yeah,
right
and, look, Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle have not had their typical types of seasons, but since Tua came back, they've put out 100-yard receiving games.
We should point out Waddle left the game yesterday.
Yeah, right.
I don't think we mentioned that.
No, my sum total takeaway from yesterday's game was, okay, this team, for the large part, by and large, is what it is offensively. If the defense plays that opportunistically, if you get into the playoffs and you can have one of those crazy stretches where you're taking the ball away three or four times every week, you've got a chance to do something. But it's going to be all about the defense and the special teams carrying the offense.
Defense and special teams are going to carry this team if they're going to do anything. And you know, the good news is it's not like you're carrying an offense that's got bad players on it. Like, it's an offense that does have C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins and Tank Dell and Joe Mixon, and there's talent on the offensive line that they haven't been able to put it together this year. Like, it's not you're not carrying a sorry offense.
Well, the pass protection has improved, and this seems like the story every year. The pass protection is actually respectable, but they can't run the ball.
No.
It's been that way for several years now, and lo and behold, and you know, maybe some of that has to do with some of the guys that have been here for several years.
Yeah, I just think the day you clinch the AFC South Championship and you get a win like that and the defense plays like it did, I think the appropriate reaction on a show like this is to come in and celebrate something like this. It doesn't happen very often, but I will acknowledge the fact that I don't know what was accomplished over the bye week with all the self-scouting on the offensive side of the ball. It looked like the exact same thing to me.
As soon as the first screen was swallowed up for 0 yardage, right. I'm like, oh, okay, way to bust those tendencies. I don't know if I've ever seen defenses so aware of exactly when a screen is coming than when the Houston Texans execute a screen.
It's
uncanny.
Yep.
And then you couple it with guys like Dalton Schultz who are just standing around like, oh, I'm supposed to. Hey, I know that guy.
Hey,
I was supposed to block him. Dalton yesterday, when he was a half yard away from the first down marker and he decided to start doing a karaoke to the left. What the? But anyway, it was a good victory by the Texans
good
yesterday.
Victory,
yes.
CJ Stroud was asked after the game. About, and I think this is an appropriate question, given the doldrums the offense has been in, do they miss Stephon Diggs' energy in the building over there?
Really just his energy is the main thing that pops out to me, just who he is as a person, how much he loves the game, his preparation. You know, those are things that we all miss of him, you know, and I talk to him every week and, you know, try to just encourage him. You know, that's not an easy thing to go through. But, you know, he's in good spirits. You know, he's rooting us on. You know, and I have so much love for that dude, man. And I know hopefully I can play with him again because I think we were just getting started. And, you know, I'm just really, 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 really just proud of him and how he's growing just in his faith and, you know, and just who he is maturing just as a man. And, you know, sometimes those valleys do that to you. And I'm just proud of him to be able to respond like he is.
He's got that big Diggs energy. Stephon Diggs does. According to
that big Nick energy. Big Diggs energy.
There was a story about Diggs last week that I didn't like dig into at all or anything. I didn't know. Yeah, he's got good energy. He's spreading the word.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly, right. Yeah. We don't know if it was true or not.
Yeah. It was weird. Credit to whoever asked him about Stephon Diggs, because that's something we've kind of wondered about. Like, all right, I wonder just exactly what's going on and what that might look like next offseason.
I was hoping that when he got hurt, he would be... Yeah, next season. Yeah. I mean, I was hoping he'd still be around the team some just to, you know, provide whatever leadership he could down on the sidelines or in the building or whatever.
He's got another second job he's got to take care of.
Allegedly, yeah. Hey, let me ask you this real quick. We got about a minute. As long as we're talking about the offense, the combination yesterday with Titus Howard at left guard and Blake Fisher at right tackle, I asked Clint the same question in the postgame show. Is that the combination that will start in the wild card round of the playoffs at NRG Stadium?
Good question. I think it should be. I think that, yes, there was pressure up the middle, but without having gone back and watched the All-22, I don't think Titus Howard was responsible for much, if any, of the pressure up the middle. And I think there's something there with Blake Fisher. And so this might be it. Unless they like that Zachary Thomas, who was taking reps at left guard last week, maybe they just want to give him a little extra time. We'll see.
He got in a couple times as like... Number 64 is eligible.
That's what he did with the Patriots, too. He reported every now and then.
Yep. All right, Seth, we're done. Antibodies to you.
Antibodies to you, Big Sean Energy.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. John Harris, Mark Vandermeer, they will take you through a victorious Monday on Texans Monday coming up next.